of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 and 106.5 FM. We're located here in this beautiful, sunny California. Welcome to the Water Zone Show. I'm your host, Rob Starr, along with Mr. Chris Davies. And most important also to mention, and we're also live on Turfs Up Radio. Turfs Up Radio is the only radio station dedicated to the media industry. We're very proud to be part of that. Chris?
How are you tonight, Rob? I mean, the music is not stopping. There we go.
Okay. I saw your eyes look like...
Well, I love that. Like, I love like the tune, right? I mean, you know, sing myself to sleep with it every night. But hey, we got some talking to do here today.
We do got some talking.
We got a great show tonight. I mean, we got lots of stuff going on, and we're going to kick it off with an absolutely wonderful surprise for somebody.
Yes, and he's dialing it up, and we haven't told the other Chris what we're doing. So.
Yeah.
So Chris, hold on.
Yeah.
And are we online? Hi, today is my grandson's birthday, and I'm not with him, and my wife is taking him out to dinner, so I thought I'd call him and wish him a happy birthday on the show. Noah?
Hello?
How are you?
Hi.
You got to speak up a little louder. What'd you do today?
We went to Grandma's, and I went to Dad's,
uh-huh.
And I played at Town & Country.
Uh-huh.
And I got a haircut.
Okay. Got your birthday.
And I went to the dog park.
Oh.
Did
you get your presents yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, tonight I have to work, though, so I figured I would call you, and everybody who's listening is hearing you on the thing. So how old are you going to be?
What?
How old are you going to be?
10.
10. And I heard, I wasn't here last week for your baseball game, that you were your all-star game, and you didn't do so, not you personally, but the team didn't do so good, did they?
Yeah.
What was the score?
It was 20-0.
That's a pretty good score.
Yeah. Well, the game before, they won 13-1.
Yeah. Wow. So,
but,
all right.
But you're the youngest on the team, so you're playing with all the big guys. But you did good all through the year. You batted like over 500, so you did great. Anyway, I will see you later tonight. I just wanted to wish you happy birthday, and Grandma's taking you to dinner.
Yeah.
What are you gonna have?
Dinner.
Huh?
Lamppost pizza.
Oh, okay.
Lamppost pizza.
Okay.
All right.
Well, say hi to Libby for me.
Hi.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Happy birthday, Noah.
Thanks.
Hi, Chris.
Miss Austin. Yes.
How are
Chris
you?
Chris.
Sorry, I had to do that because I'm not with him tonight, and I missed the little guy. So
he's a dedicated guy.
How old is he? 10?
He's 10. Into double digits.
Yeah.
Wow.
On the
milestone.
On baseball, in the regular season, he is actually batting almost 700 and something. And he's the youngest one. He's playing. He's 9, but he was playing with the 12 through 15-year-olds.
Wow.
He's a catcher and a shortstop, and he's got a great arm, and he's a great hitter, and he's just amazing. And so they picked him for the All-Star teams after the season, so they won all their games except for the last one. The one before, he did. They beat 13. They won 13-1, and then you heard the score, that how bad they lost the final game. But the kids are much bigger than him, but he's got heart, so I appreciate that with him. So anyway, I had to do that. Thank you for letting me do that.
It's a good thing he's not a pitcher. They'd call him Knuckleball Noah. So
Knuckleball Noah. Some of the pitchers that he has to catch for are,
yep,
you know, they're not, you know, they're young, so they're not accurate, let's,
yeah,
just say.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a hard position to do. So, Chris, how you been this week?
I've been pretty good. I'm up here in Sacramento this week.
Yeah, awesome.
You know, it's nice and cool up here. We got one of these, what they call the Delta breezes, that's kind of blowing around. So it's not terribly hot. So. Oh.
Did you see my buddy Gavin Newsom?
No, you know, he couldn't fit me in. I don't know.
Couldn't fit you in. Yeah.
I'll call him tomorrow and set up a meeting with you if you want with him.
Oh yeah, hey, that'd be great. I got some things to talk with him about.
we all do. But so what's happening in the world of water in California for our listeners?
Oh, my word. Well, I guess the big dust-up is the federal government started a process last year at some point to redo the biological opinions for the operations of both the Central Valley Project and the State Water Project. The Central Valley Project being primarily agriculture in the Central Valley, and the State Water Project being where Southern California and, you know, in the Bay Area get a good deal of their water. And they started this process. Now, when I believe it's, you know, it's kind of hard to keep track in the federal administration because people keep changing. But
yep.
I do believe it was when Zinke was Secretary of the Interior. He put out a memo that all environmental reviews and biological opinions had to be done on these very tight timelines. And the Trump administration has been very committed to keeping these tight timelines. The problem or the difficulty is that these are supposed to be the federal biologists weighing in on the operations of these two major water projects in terms of environmental and biological impacts. I'm not sure you can get much more complicated than that. There was a lot of question whether they were going to be able to make the deadline. I guess they were working towards it, but it's my understanding that the federal administration wasn't happy with the federal biologists had worked out, so they took all of those people off and they brought in another team. and they said, we need 60 more days. So they somehow got an extension. But, there's a lot of questions with that. You know, obviously they didn't like the results they were getting from one set of scientists, so now they're bringing in another set. There's going to be a lot of questions. And, you know, this is really a very complex thing because the state, at the same time, with this break that in water policy that's happened between the state and the federal government, the state started its own biological opinion process. The state cannot control the federal water project, but they can place restrictions on their own project, the state water project. And so there's a lot of questions about how the federal project can run with a different set of regulations and standards than the state runs, given that they're really pulling through the same channels in the Delta. So, you know, we have channels where, you know, in the Delta, it's kind of like a big flat place. And when they turn the water is coming in from primarily from the north, but some from the south, from the San Joaquin, and they turn on the pumps, and certain rivers and certain channels actually run in reverse. And they have a regulation for this. It's called OMR, or Old Middle River, and, they regulate how fast you can pump so that those rivers are running in reverse. The more in reverse they run, of course, the more confused the fish get, and that's why fish end up at the pumps and we have problems.
We need stop sign. We need the direction signs.
yeah, exactly. There was one guy that suggested that the state should be pumping at night when the fish are asleep. Seriously, it was in a public meeting, but I don't think that's going to work either.
I'm not a biologist or anything like that, but I'm sure, I would assume that the fish know that something's happening when they start pumping and going the other way.
Well, they don't, actually.
Oh.
The baby salmon, you know, the adult salmon go up into the rivers and they spawn and they lay their eggs. And the baby salmon, when they get ready to move, what usually happens, well, we actually have four different runs of salmon in California that run at four different times of the year. But, you know, in nature intended these rivers to run out to the sea. So the baby salmon get in the rivers, and they're, you know, as nature intended, they would flow out to sea. But if all of a sudden you turn on your pump and all the water starts sucking towards the pumps, the baby salmon, they go to the pumps. And, you know, they have fish screens and other things to keep them out. But the problem is that once the baby fish end up in the South Delta, they're at a dead end.
Right.
I mean, there isn't another place to go but into the aqueduct. Yeah. And actually, it's kind of humorous. This is one of the things that that just cracks me up every time I hear it, but it's true. There's fishing in the aqueduct. You can pull stripers out of the aqueduct. You can pull stripers out of the aqueduct right down there in Southern California. And sometimes the fishing is quite good. That's because baby stripers and striper larvae are getting sucked up into the pumps and put into the California aqueduct. There's no other way the fish get in the aqueduct. And it's pretty good fishing in the aqueduct. So contemplate that for a minute.
Yeah.
That just cracks me up.
Thanks. Thanks for the tip, Chris.
Yeah. Go pull out some nice stripers out of the aqueduct.
Chris is here packing up his fishing gear already.
Man, I'm wiping off my lures as we talk.
Well, you know, in the Antelope Valley, they actually have shades. Structures for people to sit under while they fish out of the aqueduct.
Wow. There's only a few places where you can get access. In a lot of places, it is restricted access. You can't get to it.
Oh, but, it, you know, throughout the Antelope Valley, especially, they actually have aqueduct fishing sites.
Right.
I mean, it's like they there's little signs on the 138, you know, go here.
Fish here.
It's amazing. And, you know, they do this in the Central Valley, too. You know, it says if you drive up to the aqueduct in the Central Valley, it will say no loitering, no this or no that. But then you'll notice to the side there is a path where you can go into. It's made for people to go into, but not motorized vehicles. You can't drive your car on the side of the aqueduct. And they have all sorts of safety videos and messages they put out. Don't go swim in the aqueduct. That's because people are fishing out of it. You know, in the Central Valley, subsistence fishing, meaning people that fish to put some food on the table that night. I mean, that's a very real thing in the Central Valley. Maybe kind of hard for us in Southern California to think about that, but, you know, in the Central Valley, it's still a big deal, especially, you know, you go up to Sacramento in the Delta here, and when you're up here in Sacramento, these rivers, they flow right through town.
Right.
And there's streams, and there's fish in these rivers. And a lot of people actually go down to the river and fish to, you know, go home and put a piece of, you know, protein on their table.
Yeah. The other bad thing in the Central Valley is the dirty water.
Well, there's the dirty drinking water.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is the dichotomy of it. The water in the aqueduct, it's quite clean, at least comparatively to what's in the groundwater, because, you know, a lot of pesticides and nitrates and other things have sunk into the aquifers.
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, that's what the cities drink. But the crops get all that clean aqueduct water, which, I mean, must be really hard when you're a farm worker and, you know, the plants get better water than you. I mean,
no, that's,
that must that, suck. But
Paul Jones from Eastern Municipal Water District and some other people talking about the affordability and the clean water issues that are up there and how we're going to do it. I know the legislator had passed some documents and we're going to pass it on to the governor, but I don't know where that stands, if he's signed it or not, or...
I don't think he signed it yet, but it's my understanding it's been passed. And so, and usually when there's a big legislative accomplishment, they're going to have some kind of big to-do when he signs it. Everyone, I mean, you know, most of the bills he signs, he puts out a press release, and here's, you know, 20, 30, 40 bills he signs. But when there's something big, then they do a big to-do, and they do a picture of all the officials standing behind him while he signs it. And I got to believe that, you know, I mean, this has been one of his core things that he's worked on. So surely he's going to sign this, and we're just waiting. They're probably waiting to bring everyone together so they can take a really good picture when he does.
You got to get up there, Chris, and get in that picture and save me and Rob a piece of cake.
Yeah.
Hey, so there's some groundwater news too, right? I heard that there's the DWR, Department of Water Resources, has come up with some recommendations. I think I read that it was 9 alternatives to some sustainability plans that have been out there for a while.
Yes, when they passed the groundwater legislation, they left a path in there. The legislator left the path so that, you know, not all the groundwater in California has been unmanaged or mismanaged. We actually have some really good examples of agencies that have found ways to get things under control. A lot of them actually right here in Southern California.
Yeah, I believe
Orange County Water District being one of them. They have had a method to, you know, because they saw back in the 1950s and the 60s when, you know, that area was growing, they saw the need to manage their groundwater resources, and they have been extremely effective. And so the legislation wanted to give a nod to, you know, people who had been, or, you know, communities that had been managing their groundwater, and give them a way so they could avoid having to do this state groundwater sustainability plan. So that is, you know, that's good news for Orange County. They were approved. Santa Clara or the San Jose area, they were another one that was approved. A number of them were approved, and a number of them were not. So,
yeah.
It's a bit of a mixed bag. Now, those agencies that did not have their alternative approved will now have to go prepare groundwater sustainability plans that are spelled out in the legislation. So some people got some bad news, but, you know, we all knew Orange County, certainly there was not a question there. Orange County has everything really dialed in. They've been a model, really, for the state in terms of the way they manage their groundwater and the way they recycle water and, you know, put it back, into the aquifers. So, you know, Orange County has really been, and really much of Southern California, been, you know, very good at managing groundwater.
That's visible here in Southern California. Anyone who travels the 605-210 freeway right there where the San Gabriel Water settling ponds are, right? You see that in action. You drive by one day and all of those ponds are filled up. The next day they're drained. Come back the next week and they do it over and over again. So they've been doing that for almost 10 weeks straight.
Yes, and, you know, they've been very progressive. They made some. They made modifications to their flood control dams. I know a couple of years ago, Morris Dam.
Yeah, Morris Dam,
they
right?
They fixed the valve so that they could, you know, release more water downstream to go into the groundwater basins, to go into those settling ponds. So yeah, I mean, this is one thing that Southern California has been really good at. And there's a lot of other plans on the table to get even better at, capturing stormwater for recharge. But we're a leader in the state on both stormwater and, you know, groundwater management and recycled water.
Yep. And that's a good thing that they're doing that. Hey, I also heard that the people who were affected by the earthquake up in Trona, I guess they get good water now again?
Yes, I guess they've got Trona's water back online, and it's safe to drink now. But really, you have to look at that, and you know, really, not a lot of impact for such a strong earthquake. Trona is kind of a hard scrabble. You can't even call it a suburb of Ridgecrest.
Right.
Yeah.
It's more down the road. It's a mining town.
Yeah.
And the bigger concern for that town is there was some damage to the mine. And if the mine does not reopen, then I think it's going to be a very difficult future for that town, because that was like all that was there. There's a dry lake there, and they're doing some type of extractive industry, I don't know, borax or potash or something like that. Ridgecrest, you know, really fared very well. Yeah, there was some damage, but, you know, they pointed out that most of Ridgecrest had been built after 1980, and so the building codes and, you know, that were in place at that time, you know, really minimized the damage. And, you know, there's not a lot of high rises, and it's not densely populated area, but still, you know, I think it's actually really great that they had that size of an earthquake, and it you know, people didn't die,
right.
Buildings didn't collapse, and the water system in Ridgecrest kept functioning.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit harder for Trona.
Right.
They're a little bit more remote, but you know, it was all in all, it's been a pretty good thing and a good reminder that we should all go be prepared for the earthquake.
I was just going to say that. Do you think, in your opinion, that you know, everybody gets this reawakening again about the earthquakes? Do you think there's more investigation going on about all these dams across California and how safe they are?
Well, they've been looking at earthquake safety of the dams for, you know, quite some time.
Right.
And Lake Isabella, which has a dam that's right up above Bakersfield, I mean, they've been doing seismic retrofitting on that dam for a while. There's another larger dam up that holds back San Luis Reservoir. It's called the Sist Dam, and it needs some earthquake retrofit. I mean, everyone's kind of taken a look at all their dams, and you know, they've been assessing them. I think that in terms of LA County, we know about the earthquake risk, and we've been I believe we've been quite active on addressing some of these issues. The larger concern is in some of these other areas. And, more remote, like San Luis Reservoir or the Sist Dam. If that dam had an earthquake and let's say the dam just catastrophically failed, it would flood out a lot of farmland and there probably would be some loss of life. But it wouldn't be like flooding out a major area, but it does need to be addressed.
Right.
You got to kind of take a look at that. Probably the larger issue in earthquakes and water would be, the delta and what's going to happen with all these dirt levees.
Sure, yeah, that's an important issue. And that maybe that's something we can do a whole segment on.
Talk about that forever.
Yeah,
because
that is a big segment. Well, let's close out the first half of the show here. It's approaching the bottom of the hour here. So, hey, a long ski season, wouldn't you say, Chris? I just heard from my brother, a ski enthusiast. He has to come home from Mammoth now because they're going to close at the end of the month. So,
yeah, they were really hoping to make it into August and be like the longest ski season ever, but they're now like, I don't know, second or third.
Yeah, July 28th, I think, is the date that is their final open day.
It's a long time.
Yeah,
since
which is amazing, being in July.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, thanks again for being on. For our listeners, if you want the best in water news in California, for those who are here in California, go to mavensnotebook.com, and you can subscribe to that. It comes every single day, and it's the best source for water news for us.
Hear, hear. It is indeed. Chris, have a great week coming up. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care, guys.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a little break here and go to our commercials from our really good people at Site One and Landscape and also Well Done. And so we'll be back in just 3 minutes.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, K292 FQ Riverside, and K293 CF Moreno Valley.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Oh, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. Eco Series products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied, fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied, fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco Solvent Cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
They love you. They love you not. They love you. Satisfying your customers, it's a full-time job. Want an easy way to make them happy? Try having your ornamentals delivered straight to the job site with Nursery Direct. Could save you and your clients a pretty penny. Think about it. Instead of driving to the nearest nursery, picking up the order, and then driving to the job site, the crew's able to begin work right away. That cuts time and labor. Savings you can pass on to your customers. And you can get your plants delivered direct, even if you don't have a nursery branch in your area. Here's another quick tip. Keep a substitutions list on standby for every project, so your team knows what to do in case a plant isn't in stock. Because there's nothing customers appreciate more than a project that finishes on time and on budget. They love you. They really love you. Aw.
All right, welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone with Chris and Rob, and hope everybody's having a great day. It's beautiful outside. I guess it's going to cool down a little bit, but I love the weather. It's wonderful. Anyway, we have our next guest. It's a gentleman named Joe Frisbee, and no, he did not invent the Frisbee.
Get that out of the way
for Joe. I'm sure he gets those questions all the time.
The phone's lighting up, Joe. They're going to ask you that question, buddy.
Yeah. And Joe is the principal of a company called Sustainable Practice Associates, and they do quite a bunch of different things. They do energy-efficient architectural design and consultation, energy audits for the Department of Energy Compliance, energy-efficient remodel and build, water audits, interior and irrigation, irrigation design and build, landscape design and build, an LID specialist, ecological landscape maintenance and programs, and habitat restoration. So we'd like to welcome Joe to the show. Joe, welcome.
Well, thank you, Rob. Thanks for inviting me on and letting me kind of share our opinions about what's going on in the world.
Absolutely. Maybe for our listeners, we start off, can you give a little background, how you got in, what do you do, and how'd you get into this business, and where are you today?
Well, I started out as a guy just looking for something to make me happy. I'd always been outdoors. My very first job was with some friends up in Northern California in the apricot and walnut industry. And kind of progressed from there, kind of always been outside. And then, like in 2008, for a lot of people, I got kind of crushed and was looking for some alternatives and got into energy efficiency and development, and then kind of combined the two because That is part of the process. We've run in our analysis is that people see stuff as they segment industries, and they're not segmented. They're all interrelated. 20% of the energy in the state of California is used to move water.
That's a lot.
And so we go from there. Just to clarify it, what I've done is formed a group with a bunch of people I've worked with over the years, and we have subject matter specialists in almost all those areas that you mentioned at the beginning of the show.
Mm. Water policy, water technology, water management, kind of all melded into one discipline.
Yeah, you know, our motto is rethink, redo, reuse, and recycle. And water is one of the most recyclable elements there is. We're all familiar with reclaimed water, and now California is kind of moving forward with gray water, and probably within the next decade, we'll be using black water in ways that people today would never even imagine or fathom.
So you believe that there's a transition, right, that's coming just like there is. And I think that you made an analogy, as I remember, when you compare water, you know, worldwide water use being very unlike the transition from fossil fuels to alternative fuels, but with water, yeah. there's really not another option, is there?
No, yeah, I mean, you know, we're pretty much foul weather creatures. And I think there is no, you know, we know that, but I don't think the message has got out there. People, you know, because we were 2015, where we're all pulling our hair out. What are we going to do? And then two of the last 3 years, we've had more rain than we could imagine. And now everybody thinks the problem's over. Well, the problem's not over, actually, because we're transitioning from weather-related drought, and maybe we ought to define drought to begin with. Drought is essentially inability to meet our demand for water.
Right.
And at any one time, fresh water, which is the only kind of water we can use, and all our plants and all our animals, that's less than 1% of all the water that's available
on the
Earth.
Planet. Yeah.
Yeah, on the whole planet. And we're in a transition now where our demand exceeds the supply that's available. I mean, 21 of the 37 aquifers in the world are in danger. I don't know if anybody is as much a web surfer as me, but they're the fourth largest body of water that ever existed, fresh water. The aerial sea is gone through simply mismanagement.
Yeah.
And we're there. I mean, the department, this is, you know, everybody likes to jump on Trump and the government and how unsafe we are, and you know, those are all matters of personal opinion, but what we're expressing here are not personal opinions. These are scientific facts. There is no more fresh water to tap.
Right.
No. What amazes me is that, you know, they all talk about the legislation, the federal and the state and all mm-hmm. talk about infrastructure, that it's great for jobs and it's, you know, helping the economy and everything else. One of the biggest challenges I think the whole United States has is the aging infrastructure of piping of water through this country. And, you know, some of these things are 100 years old and breaking and such. I mean, there needs to be active projects going on to take care of these things. And I don't see a lot of that happening. At least my personal opinion is, Chris.
You know, it's unlike air pollution or plastics or other things. Water's invisible.
Yeah.
It's an invisible problem. You're talking about infrastructure. I remember about a year and a half ago, I found this very little interesting story in downtown Philadelphia. They had a water main break, right? Mm-hmm. So they went down and they fixed the water main. Well, the broken water main was a hollowed out tree trunk. That means their water main was 300 years old.
Wow.
So, yeah, these are one of these intractable problems that we have this of getting around is how do we make this without scaring everybody. Make this a priority for all. You talk about legislation. I mean, what is it? There's approximately 24 government departments who have their fingers in water. That's not efficient. Just that alone is not efficient because you have conflicting domains of control. You have conflicting uses, and where do you? How do you satisfy all of those needs?
Right.
Well, yeah, I think it's the so many chefs in the kitchen kind of a thing that just contributes to the fear, you know, that the American and indeed worldwide public probably feel when it relates to water, right? Another interesting aspect, and we talk about drought on the water zone a lot, is that most people relate weather as being, the only cause of drought, right? It's just the weather. When it's not, it's a lot of other stuff.
No, we're, that's like I said earlier, this is not just a California, it's not a Southwest problem. It's a worldwide problem, and there are serious consequences for this. I mean, you in extreme cases, you're talking about destabilizing government.
Right.
And I mean, I don't want to create a doomsday scenario, but I mean, these are serious issues. There's, I saw a recent report. There's 25, by the end of 2030, there may be 25 cities in the United States that cannot supply water to their residents. And we're not talking, besides the usual suspects, we're talking about places like Cleveland, Washington, D.C.,
right.
San Francisco, and Los Angeles. These all are near major bodies of water, accessible, what you would think would be accessible water or facilities to provide it. And it's just not there.
Didn't the Department of Defense start examining their entire defense posture through 2030 about?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little about that?
They're looking at, do we have land-based? Do we base our troops in foreign countries? How rapidly can we deploy if there's an emergency? Where do we deploy? Do we need to form, this is kind of cynical to form alliances based on need, not need, I can't think of the proper word right now, but, where would it be safe to keep our people
right.
so that we can help other people close by? I mean, prime example, it wasn't a war situation, it was the tsunami. Who were the first one, the tsunami in Southeast Asia in Christmas Eve 2014?
Yeah.
The first people there were the U.S. Navy with hospital ships.
Right.
And these are all, like I said earlier, these are energy systems, water systems, all our systems are interconnected. And you put strain on one, you put strain on the other. We're talking about interrelations. We drink about a gallon, half a gallon, gallon of water today, but we use nearly 1,000 gallons of water in ways we don't think of. Gasoline in our cars, the tires on our cars, the clothes on our back, the stuff that's manufactured that we consume. And so water, water is everywhere.
No, no, I was going to say, you and I talked on a previous phone call about Cape Town in South Africa, where we thought they are 13 gallons a day per person. And if you take a look at people who shower here in the United States for 10 minutes, they use 25 gallons. And they only get 13 gallons to use for the whole day. See, I also believe that it's not just the infrastructure. I also look at potential what's the right word I'm looking for? Not collusion, but
cooperation.
Attacks on our water resources. I can imagine somebody, and I've heard the story from some federal people, that you could take a little model airplane and have it, remote run on batteries so it doesn't have a big gasoline engine so nobody hears it, fly it over a reservoir and dump a bunch of seraphim in, and you just kill a couple hundred thousand people. I mean, the protecting of those as well as the infrastructure is really important. I mean, that could cripple us or any country.
Well, we just had the earthquake in
right.
Ridgecrest. If that earthquake had been somewhere along the California aqueduct, okay, what would Southern California do? What if that, that aqueduct breaks, where are we?
Yeah.
I mean, are we going to be able to conserve enough water to make up for that? And so,
well, that and know, that, we, and if anybody tries to poison it or contaminate it,
yeah, I mean, that's you know, that's another subject is the vulnerability in of all our systems.
Right.
I mean, that was one of the offtakes of the House investigation after the tragic aftermath of the World Trade Center was
right.
That
yeah.
How vulnerable all our systems are.
Yeah.
You know, we talked earlier. You talked earlier. We do energy efficiencies. Here's a little sidebar for everybody, and it's water related because water and energy are tied together. First, solar panel, and then one of the biggest, most expensive components in a solar system is this little device called an inverter, where it inverts DC to AC currency. Well, look at your device, your personal devices, your laptop, your TV, your phone, your computer. Those are all DC devices. You don't need an inverter.
Yep.
And on boats, they already do this. You could buy a DC refrigerator. You can buy a DC washing machine. That's what they run on those huge private yachts up there in Marina Del Rey and in Marin County. Those those boats, those are not AC. That's not AC equipment. And when that's all, and you know, we're back to the Edison model of being our own supply house. So and then if you're generating your own electricity. You don't. We don't need these huge hydroelectric dams. You know, I mean, again, invisible. Hoover Dam almost got shut down in 2016, if I got my dates right.
Yep. Well, when we went through the big drought here in California recently, the last couple of years, you know, they talked about everybody reducing water 25%. That was a big demand from our governor at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I know there was a report done by one of our people, Inge Biskoner, who worked with our ag group, saying that if they gave the rebates back to ag, they could have saved a whole lot more water than just giving it to the residential people.
Yeah, maybe a better, maybe a cleaner way to look at that is kind of contrast, right, the urban water user with the ag water user.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe Joe, you can kind of frame that up for us because there's a tremendous difference.
I mean, you're getting really touchy. I've had conversations with a couple of ag people, and this is a very, very touchy subject for them. But
sure.
Let me give you an example. Israel. First of all, Israel does not consider water a natural resource. It's a strategic resource.
Right.
The use of water within Israel is a national strategic issue. And in Israel, you cannot flood irrigate. Everything is grown by drip. Drip was invented in Israel.
Right.
And they are still able to produce a surplus. So, you know,
they even sell it excess to their enemies.
Yeah, I mean, politics answers the false news. I don't know how you wanted to say it. When the Palestine Liberation Army is lobbing rockets into Israel, Israel does not cut off their water tap, and the only place that those people get their water is from Israel.
Right.
So, you know, it's actually a violation of the UN mandate to use water to coerce people into action. But yeah, in the United, back to general uses, we need to re-examine thoroughly and deeply what we are doing with water. I mean, I love to eat. You know, I didn't get these 50 extra pounds easily.
Yeah.
And but agriculture is as important as it is in the state of California. It's only 2% of our GDP, and I don't know the numbers in Sacramento, but it's their influence on water policy, in my personal opinion, is undue. They need to start. I mean, I understand it's your crop. You made a major investment to grow almonds, but is that good for the future of the entire state of California to grow trees in an area that naturally does not have trees? I mean, you can't follow an almond tree. You can follow wheat. You can follow strawberries. You can follow almost anything. You can't follow a tree. And
yeah, come back.
We don't
know
how much water is left in that aquifer.
Right. And that's a thing that, you know, science is working on right now, because they can't accurately tell what we got underground. They can guess, but they don't, you know, how accurate is that? They don't know.
Well, LIDAR is an interesting one. They just did a similar thing in Chile. Chile has the same problem as we do. And what they're finding is that they have, it's actually there. I don't know, you know, the science is different or it's more progressive or what, but they're kind of finding it's 45-day cycles. That when the snow starts melting up on the Andes, I don't know how they trace it. You know, like I said, I'm not deep into the science, but they know that about 45 days later, that starts showing up in the local aquifers.
Right.
And, you know, that's the other thing. California has a surface water policy and they have a groundwater policy. But the reality is they're not different. They are one and the same. Why do we have two different policies?
Can't answer that.
Yeah, it's tough.
yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Maybe I should volunteer. Somebody from the outside needs to come in and say, hey, what are you looking at?
Well, when rollers first came out, one of the biggest fallacies, people thought you set it, forget it, and it's going to instantly reduce your water bill. But sometimes people weren't watering correctly to the vegetation they had.
Yeah, so the baseline
got skewed.
Yeah, skewed.
They really needed more. And it's really not a set it and forget it world. I mean, everybody would like to go to that point. I think down the road with the Internet of Things and, you know, how smart connected products will help us, help do more sustainability. I believe in that. But I also believe there's a lot of issues that are going to come with that, such as security and things. You know, people have smart controllers today and Wi-Fi connections. Other people can go in and hack the systems and hack their computers and see all that. And, you know, everybody says, oh, well, you know, that's just the way it is. It's simple. It's going to be fixed. Well, it's not that easy, because if you think some high school kid can't crack into the U.S. government, they've done that before and see all of that. I told the story before about how some guy came home from work one day and his wife got mad because he left the door unlocked. And he says, no, I locked it. And find out that somebody called Alexa. They have an answering machine and they have an Alexa there. And it said, hey, Alexa, open the front door. And guess what? The door got open. So there's a lot of security things that I think is going to go with down the road with our artificial intelligence and all that. But we're still a long way from all of that, because I could see, you know, it's just like our grid. It's vulnerable, very vulnerable. If you can hack into the U.S. government, you can hack into somebody's personal computer.
You know, I mean, while we're throwing harpoons, grass consumes water.
Right.
Well, the largest aquifer in the world is under a desert, the Sahara.
Right.
The other three largest, the Serengeti, the Ogallala, and I don't know the number of the one in Asia, but those are all under grass. Mm. The natural ground cover is grass. So this mythology, it's not plants that are over water.
Right.
Us.
Yep.
We overwater. We override, like you're talking about, we override systems. We panic. If we see, you know, I've been in the maintenance business most of my life. They see a dry spot, they think their plants are going to dry.
You have HOAs that, you know, they hire a landscape company, a maintenance company, and, you know, the maintenance company wants to make sure the thing is nice and colorful and green, because it's good, great curb appeal, so people come and, you know, buy the condos or rent the condos or whatever.
Right.
I mean that's an important thing. And like you said, Israel's totally different. They definitely have a culture that totally understands water in a different perspective and what they need to do about it. And, plus the government controls all the water. Here, it isn't that way. So I don't know if it'll ever be that way here.
I don't know. It looks like we're coming up against the harbor. But, like, one of the problems is water a federal issue or a state's rights issue?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people will tell you it's a state's rights issue. So So here's my question. If that be so, if Colorado decides that they need their water, what about Utah, Nevada, California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Mexico?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, we need to bring some common sense to the issues. We've done it. I mean, we put a man on the moon, and when we decided to do that, 99% of the materials processes didn't exist.
No, yeah. If you can think about it, you can do that. Well, one of the things to add on, because we're getting to the end here, but
sure.
Just to show you that we agree with you about saving water, the Water Zone and the Toro Company, along with Municipal Water District of Orange County, are doing something called Extreme Water Makeover Contest. And what it is deadlines for entry is July 31st. What we do is ask people to send in a photo of their front yard, along with a short narrative, 300 words or less, telling us why they need an extreme water makeover.
Chris? Yep, exactly. So that you can turn those into thewaterzone@toro.com. That's the email to send it to, right?
Yeah, waterzone@toro.com.
Waterzone@toro.com, you're right. So the winner gets essentially a complete front yard irrigation system or an update if they've already got one in there, right? They get EPA WaterSense and EPA Energy Star in-home appliances, as well as certified...
Dishwasher, yep. Lawn washer, clothes washer, and... Shower heads.
And right, and all the indoor water saving stuff, low flow shower heads, toilets, that kind of stuff.
So anyway, we got to do that. And now we're up against the news hour that we have to do for NBC.
Hey, Joe, thanks for coming on, man. And for talking to us at the Green Industry Hall of Fame event there when this first came together. And I'm glad you came on the show.
And we'll have you
glad
back.
To talk to you. And maybe we can do it again.
Oh, absolutely.
With a little more focus.
Yeah, no, we definitely want to do that. How can they reach your company is at...
website.
Sustainable Practices Associates.
Great. And it's www.sustainable.associates.com, so please do that. And thanks for listening in. And to hear more episodes of The Water Zone, you can go to KCAA Radio. And